Welcome to Clinical Conversations. This is Joe Elia. We'll talk today about malpractice. But first, the week's top news from Physicians First Watch editor Amy Herman.
Thanks, Joe. First, a large meta-analysis confirms that systemic corticosteroids, or antibiotics, are effective for treating exacerbations of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD. Meanwhile, evidence for other treatments, like magnesium sulfate, anti-inflammatory agents, and inhaled corticosteroids, is insufficient. Next, in coronavirus news, the CDC reported the first possible case of community spread of COVID-19 in the U.S. South Korea, the site of the largest outbreak outside of China, saw an uptick in cases and earned a Level 3 travel advisory from the CDC. At the same time, the virus made its way through Europe and the Middle East and entered Latin America for the first time. Elsewhere, an analysis from the SPRINT trial suggests that intensive blood pressure treatment may extend life expectancy by up to 3 years in some adults. Patients in the trial were at high cardiovascular risk, did not have diabetes, and started off with a systolic blood pressure between 130 and 180. Next up, a study calls into question routine mammogram screening in women aged 75 and up. In the study, breast cancer screening between ages 70 and 74 was associated with lower breast cancer mortality. But after that, women failed to see a mortality benefit. And finally, the FDA this week approved a generic version of albuterol sulfate inhalation aerosol. That is, the asthma inhaler marketed as ProAir HFA. The drug is indicated to treat reversible obstructive airway disease and to prevent exercise-induced bronchospasm. And that's it for this week. Stick around for Joe Elia's latest clinical conversation.
Late in January, JAMA published an intriguing review of the effect that medical liability risk is having on the quality of care. The analysts looked at things like tort reform and malpractice insurance premiums and tried to discern a link in the published literature between those strategies and improved rates of, for instance, patient mortality, readmissions, and patient satisfaction. In short, they found no obvious connection. Accompanying the analysis was an editorial co-written by our guest, William Sage. In the editorial, Dr. Sage sketches out a vision of where malpractice liability is now and where it needs to go in the future. This academic year, Dr. Sage is a visiting professor at NYU School of Law and School of Medicine. Back at the University of Texas, Austin, he serves as the James Daugherty Chair for Faculty Excellence in the School of Law and as Professor of Surgery and Perioperative Care at Dell Medical School. Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Dr. Sage.
Thanks very much.
You didn't seem surprised in your editorial that the authors of the JAMA paper didn't find a link between liability strategies and improved patient care. In fact, you saw those strategies perhaps as belonging to a bygone era, right?
That's correct. I've spent a lot of my academic career working in this area. I have great respect for the authors of the review, and I think most of us realize that trying to make a linear relationship between malpractice risk and quality of care is going to be very difficult.
Yes. So you write that liability alone won't improve physicians' behavior and, on the contrary, may make it worse. So could you explain that a bit further?
I'd be happy to. I'd like to situate this in what I think is really an important issue for physicians going forward, which is that many characteristics of the current healthcare system, in my view, are based on a particular view of medical ethics, either something that the profession has asserted, something that the profession hasn't revisited, or something that other parties take advantage of. And so I think the most important message for physicians is that rethinking ethics, including ethics around the quality of care, is really going to be the way to lead a path forward.
And so
let me be specific with respect to this particular study.
Okay.
For physicians, many of the studies that have been done empirically of malpractice risk, the ones that the authors of the review draw on, are studies that basically attempt to answer a political question of the 1980s. which is whether malpractice liability applied to physicians and reflected in malpractice insurance premiums that physicians pay is a net positive or a net negative for the healthcare system. Physicians have generally argued that malpractice risk is random or worse, and that imposing liability will actually discourage good quality care. Supporters of tort liability tend to argue that without malpractice liability, more bad physicians will create more harm to patients. And it's that particular link built around the individual physician that this review evaluates and finds not a deterministic answer one way or the other.
In fact, is it possible that to avoid liability, clinicians may sometimes be over-testing and as a result have their patients incur more risk because of false positives?
It's certainly possible, and in prior work that I and some of the authors of the review have done, we've looked at so-called defensive medicine. What's really interesting to me is how few of these studies really interrogate serious clinical problems. We're usually not looking in these studies at the care of common clinical conditions and what's really happening in the patient experience and the provider experience. Instead, we're making inferences from sort of aggregates of malpractice premiums or aggregates of lawsuits or some change in the law. And certainly one area that we found years ago that I think is relevant to this review and this editorial has to do with ways in which, say, a woman who might have a detectable breast cancer could be shuttled between a primary care physician, often an obstetrician gynecologist, and a radiologist and perhaps a surgeon for biopsy, with each of those parties worrying about the associated malpractice risk, but in fact not serving the patient very well.
You and the authors of the paper mention the problem of signal and noise, the signal to noise ratio. And can you talk about that a bit?
Certainly. It turns out that malpractice risk is something that physicians tend to worry about and physicians worry about across generations. Professions really change, and the generational change in the health professions, I think, is one of the most important health policy issues today. But there is received wisdom from sort of older generations of physicians to younger generations of physicians that make malpractice risk particularly salient and particularly worrisome. And it's sort of in that connection that I think a high quality liability system engages with physicians. In many instances, physicians are no longer small business people. In many instances, physicians no longer buy their own malpractice coverage. But physicians still view accusations of malpractice as quasi-criminal charges, and they worry greatly about them, and the experience of being sued is a miserable one. And I think what really at the physician level leads to a higher quality liability system is a system that supports physicians in doing the right thing, that supports physicians in being honest with patients, in supports physicians in thinking about ways in which not just care that they personally administer, but care that their patients receive or fail to receive might actually lead to harm. These are the sorts of things that a traditional liability system has not done well.
And so is the shift now, because of the change in medical practice, is the shift now to institutions, and should this be the focus of those efforts now?
So as you know, our editorial looks at four levels of the sort of health quality ecosystem. The patient level, which at this point is often less about having one trusted physician and more about navigating a complex set of care relationships. And what the patient experiences from a high quality liability system has to be, in essence, confidence in the quality and safety of care, and a feeling of control and transparency. It's not all that different from what a physician working in a similar system would want to experience from sort of the events of error, the prevention of error, and the way in which an error, should it happen, is then sort of addressed and, you know, ameliorated. A lot of this is really about systems. And certainly most of the events that the authors of the review examine are events that took place at hospitals, because those are places where the most serious medical errors have occurred with the most those serious consequences. And yes, a lot about a high quality system going forward has to do with improving systems within institutions. The ways in which those systems perform their risk management, the ways in which they finance compensation for error, and the ways really in which they support their clinicians, not just physicians, but nurses, should an error occur. We talk a lot about burnout, but we don't really talk about the ways in which a supportive care environment for the staff as well as for the patients is going to make for a higher quality environment.
So given that in the past, punishment and restitution were the kinds of bywords in malpractice as final outcomes. There is an opportunity now to learn from mistakes, to take those misadventures and spread the word about them and their lessons to a larger group of people. Is that what you hope to see?
Certainly, I'd like to see that. I think, you know, part of the lesson here is that this is an excellent underlying review done with excellent statistical methodology, looking at the correct studies. But the studies are really of a bygone era. They're really studies that are informed or you know, were designed to address the effects of tort reform on medical quality in an individual physician model that really isn't the model today. And yes, I think what we're looking for today is a system that is both institutional and individually sensitive. So the institutional structures are there to prevent errors, to learn from errors, to support everybody involved. At the individual level, I think we need to avoid some of the problems from the traditional liability system, the psychic effects on physicians and other caregivers, the reputational effects, the ways in which, you know, liability recourse has been unavailable to injured patients. And then I think, you know, where we get in the editorial that really is absent from the empirical discussion, and just as an aside, but it's an important one, this is one where the senior editors of JAMA were extremely supportive in letting us as editorialists discuss this, is the population level. Uh-huh. Population health and community health and the social determinants of health are such an important area of health policy today, and one that for many people does not intuitively connect to medical liability. But in our view, if there really is an effort to have a liability ecosystem that improves the quality of care, it's also going to have to operate at the population level.
And so that was going to be my next question. I'll quote you. You talk about a quote, construct of health justice that examines clinical care through the lens of social equity. Can you expand on that a bit more?
I'd be happy to. Insofar as the country has thought about and the profession has thought about the healthcare system as being a largely technological enterprise engaged in by specialists, we've created a set of bioethics principles and engaged a set of bioethical debates that have dealt with technology and society and technology. I think we now realize that many of the most profound ethical challenges in healthcare are not about technology, but they're about American society and the structures within American society. And many of the buzzwords today in health policy and in medical education, social determinants of health, healthcare disparities, and now health equity are all recognitions at both the individual and the population level that these are major sources of quality or lack of quality in the system. And for this reason, the editorial talks about equality as being an important component of quality. And this comes back to my point about the ethical commitment of younger generations of physicians and other health professionals going forward. Once one realizes that one's patients have lives outside the patient role and that lives outside the patient role really do matter to their health, then there are obligations and responsibilities and perspectives that health professionals can have that will be quality and safety enhancing, even though they are not as immediate as what happens within the hospital. And nobody is against technology. I mean, it is scientific progress that will lead us to all sorts of healthcare and health improvements. So, I mean, I think the question really does relate to malpractice as an external threat versus malpractice that really reflects what we do and fail to do within medical care. But I think where I'd like to leave the audience here is a sense that, you know, when malpractice liability is concerned, physicians have now for a few generations felt powerless. Yeah. And I think that's wrong. Physicians have always had a lot of power to define the terms of error and recourse for error. And I think today there are opportunities to do this in a much more broadly ethical and engaged way than most physicians have thought about for the last 30 or 40 years. And so I think ultimately the lesson of the empirics here may be that nobody wins the political debate over tort reform, but most experts in the field will tell you that was always the wrong question. Yeah. The question is, what can the health professions do to improve health and improve medical care for patients? And I think the answer is that we can do a lot.
All right. I want to thank you very much for speaking with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was our 254th episode. The whole collection is searchable and available free at podcasts.jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations is a production of the NEJM Group, and we come to you from NEJM Journal Watch. The executive producer is Kristen Kelly. I'm Joe Elia. Thanks for listening.